This is the Todd Wright Toddcast. Thank you for tuning in. It is presented by Brandon Legal Group. They are your full service law firm. You never need to ask what type of law Brandon Legal Group specializes in. You can simply reach out for a free consult. They are full service and they can help you anywhere in the greater Tampa Bay area. You do not need to live, work, or have your legal issue originate within the city limits of Brandon, Florida. Brandon Legal Group are enormous supporters of Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournaments. For those of you that play in Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournaments, including the upcoming Todd Wright Tour XXIII, Good vs. Evil Chapter 4, on February 1st at the Chichi Rodriguez Golf Club in Clearwater, if you would like to meet the foursome from Brandon Legal Group, it includes marketing people, lawyers, etc., I will be happy to introduce you, just so you can put a face to a name when you are in need of legal assistance. 844-4-BLG-4ME. 844-4-BLG-4ME. Or visit BrandonLegalGroup.com. I'd also like to thank Anthony Peroni, going on year 61 with three Pin Chasers locations in the greater Tampa Bay area, 6816 Gale Boulevard in Zephyr Hills, 5555 West Hillsborough Avenue, just north of Tampa International Airport, and the Midtown location with 50 lanes to serve you 7 days a week. The location where I just visited the other night, catching up with my friend, Miss International World United States, kicking my butt in two games of bowling on a very busy Thursday night at Pin Chasers Midtown. That location is 4847 North Armenia, and that is also the location of my friend, golf partner, and colleague Drew Garabo's Down to Bowl event, with all proceeds going to Down Syndrome Association. It's $65 for an individual entry and $200 for a foursome. You can go to The Bone online to find out more about Drew Garabo's Down to Bowl at Pin Chasers Midtown. That's on Saturday, February 29th. Drew will be there. I'm sure John Senning will be there. I'm hopeful Micah will be there. I'm guessing Mike Oliveira will be there. Heck, he may be doing his recently expanded Mike O Saturday radio show that day from Pin Chasers Midtown. We'll find out more about the personalities, and if I'm around and if they want me involved, I'll be happy to go as well. Again, it's Drew Garabo's Down to Bowl at Pin Chasers Midtown, Saturday, February 29th. All proceeds to the Down Syndrome Association. For more information on that, go to theboneonline.com. And for all the Pin Chasers specials, follow Pin Chasers on Facebook or on Instagram, or you can go to pinchasers.net. Again, email for topics for me to talk about on the Toddcast, reaction to anything I said on the Toddcast, or just to reach out, say hi, maybe ask a separate question, some sort of question we haven't covered on the Toddcast. I'm fine with it. I will give you a response, just like I've done for three straight years with everybody, to the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast. The email, though, is different for the Toddcast. It's simply write.todd@yahoo.com, write.todd@yahoo.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at ToddWright2020 and on Facebook. I'm simply Todd Wright in Tampa, Florida. The previous Toddcast was a preview of the Saturday NFL divisional action. And actually, I am going ahead and previewing the Sunday action. I'm going to cut this podcast. I'm doing it as we speak late on Friday night, just so as I do my golf stuff. I have a tournament in 3 weeks, and then getting embedded in watching the Saturday games. I don't want to lose track of time, so I'm going ahead, and on this Friday night, I'm cutting this podcast to preview the Sunday NFL divisional action. So if come Saturday, something new has happened involving the status of a player in one of the Sunday games that clearly changes the dynamic of the game, please understand and factor that in to this podcast, because it was something that neither you nor I saw coming prior to Saturday morning, afternoon, Saturday evening, what have you, or even Sunday morning. The early game on Sunday, and of note, this year they have, I believe this is the first time they've done this, They've adjusted the schedule. I don't remember them doing this last year. Maybe I missed it. Normally, you have to wait until the championship games for the conferences to get the late afternoon start, followed by more of a primetime game on Sunday. Often the Sunday games in the divisional round have the traditional 1 o'clock Eastern time early start like we had in the first round. Not this year. And it's not because they have teams that have to play in certain time zones. That's no factor here. So where normally Kansas City would be kicking off at 12 noon local time, they're going to kick off 2.5 hours later, 2 hours later, 2.5 hours later, in sort of the mid-afternoon, and then set up a game that plays in much of prime time for the late game on Sunday. So as it relates to that first game on Sunday, the Texans advancing to play the Chiefs. Texans off that 16-0 comeback and overtime victory over the Buffalo Bills. Let's just talk about some things from a Houston standpoint here. The terrific performance by Deshaun Watson to come back to win that game, not just on the one key play that set up the game-winning field goal in overtime for Houston, but overall, how efficient he was once the team was down 16-0, throwing for a touchdown, rushing for a touchdown, bouncing off two Buffalo Bills defenders who had him clear in their sights on that play to the running back or wide receiver, the name that very few of us know or even care about because it was Watson who made the play to set up that game-winning field goal. Still, I think most of us do look at just how significant it was that Buffalo didn't put the game away earlier and then all the things that they didn't do to finish the job, even though they came back late to force the overtime. It was a spot where traditionally the Texans lose. Now, granted, it was only the second time that Deshaun Watson had been in this spot. He had lost in that spot the previous year to Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. But still, there were a number of questionable decisions in game management made by Bill O'Brien and his staff. J.J. Watt came back in the game. He did make some plays in the game. Josh Allen did not take advantage of what still seems like a very vulnerable secondary as it relates to the Texans, and that's something that should be worrisome against a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, who not only won his first playoff game last year before losing in the AFC Championship game to the New England Patriots, but clearly is as or more talented a quarterback than Deshaun Watson. Both are considered two of the best young, multifaceted quarterbacks in the game, where Josh Allen did have a good finish to the season with Buffalo, but he just looked, what's the right word? He didn't handle things well. Despite the plays he made to set up Buffalo with the 16-0 lead. And there's a lot of blame to be shared from that game, but I don't see Pat Mahomes making some of the same wild plays or mistakes that Josh Allen made last week against the Texans. From a Texans standpoint, Will Fuller says he's going to go, but he's kind of a poor man's Carson Wentz in these games. He can't finish the game. You can't count on him to be out there when you need him. And when he's not out there, it makes life more difficult on DeAndre Hopkins, although to Deshaun Watson's credit, Hopkins' credit, and perhaps the play calling of the Texans, they got Hopkins involved. Who was not touching the ball when they were down 16-0. It's going to be more difficult against a Kansas City pass defense that, look, the Bills have a good defense and one of the top corners in the game in Tre'Davious White. Kansas City's pass defense is so much better than they were a year ago when clearly the defense wasn't keeping up with the offense in Kansas City and was exposed by Tom Brady and the Patriots, and why the Chiefs, with home field advantage in the AFC playoffs, didn't go to the Super Bowl. That's why they fired a defensive coordinator, brought back in a veteran defensive coordinator in Steve Spagnuolo, and as the year has gone on, Kansas City has become a very strong defense against the pass. Where they are much more vulnerable is against the run. That means perhaps there's something there for Deshaun Watson to use his legs. Carlos Hyde has been sort of sneaky effective for the Texans all year. I actually admire the way the Texans run block for guys like Carlos Hyde, in how they use their personnel up front, some of the ways they move, non-traditional blocking methods to create mismatches or to create numbers that give a Carlos Hyde more of an opportunity to find a hole and exploit it. These aren't for big runs. These are just enough to keep the chains moving and keep Deshaun Watson on the field to make big plays. If the Texans can do that against the Chiefs, they stay in the game. The Chiefs, though, defensively and on special teams, could be in a good position in this game. Patrick, moving to the Kansas City side of things, Patrick Mahomes hasn't been producing touchdowns at the same rate since he came back from the knee injury. Look, Chiefs will take that he came back from the knee injury at all with how bad it looked when he went down. But the touchdown production hasn't been there. Still, the Chiefs, despite having around that time a midseason losing streak, have won enough to not only win their division, but get the first round bye, get home field in this round, and if Baltimore is upset by Tennessee, the Chiefs would host the AFC Championship game for the second week in a row. The Texans, vulnerable in the secondary, and they're vulnerable to a running attack. And while we fantasy owners can tell you that there's not been any rhyme or reason all year long on who the Chiefs feature at running back, who they use in certain situations, and all the different names that have been there. Multiple guys named Williams. At one point, Shady McCoy looked like the guy. Then he looked like he wasn't going to play on the team anymore. He was a healthy scratch. What was it, week 10-ish? Something like that. Week 9, week 10. There was this buzz in August about a goal line specialist in, was it Darwin Thompson? He didn't really make a splash until very late in the season. But this could be a game where Kansas City's run game can do some damage. I don't know who. I'm guessing it would be Williams. It might be McCoy. And when I say Williams, I mean Darren Williams, not Daryl Williams, who had more big games than any other guy. But that could also shorten the game, keep Deshaun Watson from getting as many snaps. And there could be some short fields if the Chiefs' pass defense is effective in preventing Deshaun Watson from sustained drives. I think a strong case can be made for the Chiefs winning this game and potentially winning it without a lot of drama in the fourth quarter or late in the game, without necessarily Patrick Mahomes having a huge game, which he really hasn't had since he came back from the knee injury. The entire team really actually has a good matchup here against the Texans. That the Texans were a playoff team where the Chiefs are more of a Super Bowl contending type team. So that's the way I see some things with Texans and Chiefs, and the Vegas spread being basically double digits speaks to how the guys in the desert feel about Kansas City, and I think they are a worthy favorite against the Texans. The late game, more and more intriguing. I've talked about the Seahawks and Packers. I've touched on it throughout the week on the Toddcast. Seahawks had a very disappointing finish to the regular season. That loss to Arizona in Week 17, bad loss. They had some bad games on defense as well. The win against the Eagles was not overly impressive. Russell Wilson put up nearly 400 yards of offense, and the Seahawks scored 17 points. DK Metcalf was impressive. Without DK Metcalf, I'm not saying Seattle loses the game, but Metcalf was a big reason why they did win the game, and especially against an Eagles secondary that was one of the worst all year against the pass in the NFL. It was Wilson to Metcalf that was ultimately the difference in the game. I keep falling back on the fact that Seattle, as much as, say, Minnesota or the Ravens, okay, let's just take those three teams, rely so much on running the ball this year. And you know what? I mean, running the ball successfully got you to the playoffs. There was a graphic, I think it was on one of the NBC games. I might have been wrong. Might have been on one of the other networks where they talked about the top four quarterbacks in passing yards this year, and none of them made the playoffs. Some of them were not even close, like a Jameis Winston, for example. And then you take the top four rushing teams in the NFL, and they all made the playoffs. So as it relates to what the run means to the Ravens, what the run means to the Vikings, and granted, they modified that approach a little bit after the beginning of the season and started using Diggs and Thielen, at least until Thielen got hurt, and we're getting Cousins outside the pocket, so we had more time to make those downfield throws. But as it applies to Seattle, they're one of those teams that you look at their percentage of play calls, and it's significantly a run-based offense. That all changed when they lost Chris Carson, especially when it came 1 week after they lost Rashad Penny. They're basically down to Travis Homer and whatever Marshawn Lynch can give them. And I know it's fun and it's exciting to see Marshawn Lynch back on the field, but how much can he give you? Is there another beast mode run in there? Or a dominant game from a Marshawn Lynch? I have my doubts. I mean, he didn't do much of that with the Raiders when he was healthy enough to play for John Gruden going back a year. And Travis Homer's just so inexperienced. And there's a reason he was number four on the Seahawks depth chart. So when you don't have the personnel to run such a significant percentage of your base offense, I think you're just putting so much on, granted, a current Hall of Famer in a Russell Wilson, who was interesting. Kurt Warner, I guess we'll see this on NFL Network on Sunday on their pregame show. Warner sat down with Russell Wilson, and one of the things he teased him with was, you know, if you win two more, you become the 13th quarterback to play in three Super Bowls. And it was interesting that Warner posed this to him because Warner is one of the 12. I'll leave to you, don't look it up, how many of the 12 you can name. I just gave you one in Kurt Warner. I actually was able to do it, but it took me a while. I didn't look anything up. I just had to look up the last two to confirm I was right. And you got to go almost all the way back in Super Bowl history to do it. You really do. All the way back to when we were in single digits for numbers on Super Bowls to complete the list. Anyway, it's a lot to ask of Russell Wilson. Green Bay's defense is, it's okay. I wouldn't call it great. There have been games where Green Bay won because of their defense. There have been games where Green Bay has shown vulnerability in defense. It's not like the 49ers defense or the Ravens defense or how good the Patriots defense played for so much of the year. It's not at that level. So that's just a lot to ask of Wilson and a young Metcalf, even a Lockett in their contributions, a Hollister who has contributed more and more and more in the back half of the season. From the Green Bay standpoint, this is Matt LaFleur's first go-around as a head coach. Clearly, this year's Packers better than last year's. That Packer team quit on Mike McCarthy. Whatever the message was, whatever the offense was, Aaron Rodgers was done with it, and the team followed suit. And they bring in, as so many teams did with their head coaching hires this last offseason, other than Denver with Vic Fangio, they were looking for another bright, innovative offensive mind. Where things didn't work so well, say for Zach Taylor in Cincinnati, things have worked better for Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. But let's step back. Has Aaron Rodgers had a great year? No. But he's won a lot of games as quarterback of Green Bay. Kind of like Mahomes' numbers are down since Mahomes returned from injury, Rodgers' numbers just overall this year are down. There aren't a lot of those three touchdown, 400-yard passing games. But Green Bay is still winning. There just seem to be limitations on these Packers. They overcome them to win games. The limitations being Rodgers doesn't have a lot of guys to throw to. He has Devontae Adams. He has an aging Jimmy Graham, who actually has a good matchup in this game, and not much else. Now, from the running back perspective, and Aaron Rodgers was always a fan of Aaron Jones, and I think one of the flaws in Mike McCarthy was he was reluctant to play Aaron Jones more. He was either worried that Jones would miss blitz pickups and get Rodgers hurt, or that Jones was injury prone. Jones this year has been one of the more productive guys scoring touchdowns in the NFL, and often they come in bunches. He can catch the ball out of the backfield as well, although most of his damage is done when Rodgers sticks it in his gut. So with Green Bay, the way they're going to put up points, it's either Adams or Jones. It's very rarely anybody else. And it just seems to be less explosive offense with the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands. So in line with defensively, it shows that they're okay, that they can win games like that. And, you know, even that Week 17 game where New England wasn't able to stop the Dolphins in the end, the Packers didn't play great against the Lions, but at the end of the game, what'd they do? Enough to win the game, and that earned them this bye in the first round. And ultimately, if the game comes down to, does Aaron Rodgers have the ball in his hands with 2+ minutes to go? You're thinking Aaron Rodgers is going to get you the points necessary to extend the game or to win the game. Where with Russell Wilson, he was in that position just a couple weeks ago against the Niners, and I know it was inches short, but he didn't get it done. And he's 0-3 at Lambeau, which is odd for the former Wisconsin quarterback, albeit he joined Wisconsin after a few years he doesn't like to talk about down at NC State. I can make a case for Seattle winning this game. I can. Winning a low-scoring game. But if the game is close late, it's hard to not believe that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers won't win it. Seattle also dealing with a ton of injuries and trying not to have recency bias on the Seahawks. Their win last week wasn't that impressive. And granted, holding the Eagles out of the end zone, you played three quarters of the game against a 41-year-old quarterback who played roughly half the game with a torn hamstring and had nobody to throw to anyway. So that's why I think if the game is close late, Green Bay wins it. But yeah, I could make a case for Seattle winning the football game, but not if it's close in the final few minutes. I think it's one of those that Seattle would almost have to win it the same way they beat Philadelphia last week. They'd obviously have to keep Devontae Adams out of the end zone or limit him to, what, 4 or 5 catches for, what, maybe 55 yards in the game. And not have Aaron Jones have a big game. One gentleman did email me and said, you know, what do you think of this Seattle Green Bay game? And I said, I said DK Metcalf can win it or Aaron Jones can win it. And if neither of those guys have a big game, then I think the game is close. And in the end, if Rodgers has the ball in a close game with under 4 minutes to go, I've just seen this too many frickin' times as a Cowboys fan, which is the irony of now the Cowboys being coached by Mike McCarthy, that Rodgers tends to win those games. Thanks for listening to this Sunday NFL Divisional Playoff Preview of the Todd Wright Toddcast. We'll be back after all games are played. We'll talk more about coaching news at that time and start looking ahead to the conference championship games as well. Remember, my email is wright.todd@yahoo.com. I'm on Instagram at toddwright2020. On Facebook, I'm simply Todd Wright in Tampa, Florida. If you want golf information, if you'd like to be placed on the waiting list for the sold-out Todd Wright Tour 23, which is Good versus Evil Chapter 4 on February 1st, you can email toddwrightgolf@gmail.com. Thanks to Brandon Legal Group and Pin Chasers and you for listening to the Todd Wright Toddcast.